featuring stimulating in-depth interviews with special guests from all areas of the arts. And now, here's your host for It's a Question of Balance, Ruth Coplin.
Welcome to the show where we balance the intellectual with the creative, exploring whether we have more in common than divides us, through thought-provoking conversations with people on the street and with inspiring guests from the arts. If you'd like to find out more information about the show, you can go to the website, itsaquestionofbalance.com. There's podcasts there of all past shows, and also you can connect with me on social media, should you wish. So again, the website is itsaquestionofbalance.com. Right now, we're featuring the Arts Hour, and my special guests are award-winning filmmaker Jen Heck and Lena Kadri, one of the lead protagonists of Jen's new film, The Promised Band. I covered the Cinequest 2016 Film Festival for the show's Art Hour, and this is part of a series of special arts reports that I'm featuring from the festival. The Promised Band is the story of a fake rock band comprised of Israeli and Palestinian women who decide that despite their dubious musical talent, a music group is the best cover story to meet and interact with each other in a place where normal friendship is criminalized. First up is my conversation with award-winning filmmaker Jen Heck, who was the director and instigator of the film. So let's hear my conversation with Jen. Welcome to the show, Jen.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're using art to talk about difficult issues in The Promised Band. I'm wondering if you can remember the first time that you became aware of the power of art to affect us on a deep level as well as entertain us.
I think for me, I've always been kind of focused on the artistic side of things, but when I was a little kid, the most significant moment I can remember is seeing the first Batman movie by Tim Burton.
Oh yeah.
And which my grandmother took me out to see over school break, and just in the first 5 minutes of the movie, with the camera moving around and the music, feeling like so emotionally affected by that, even though nothing was really happening. And I think that's actually, I was very young, but I was like, I want to do that. And so it wasn't like a big, meaningful, a spiritual moment per se, like, or, you know, seeing something political that changes who you are or anything, but I was moved by artificial devices, I guess you could say, and I became aware that this was something that people could do. And I think not much after that, I had sort of always been interested in politics, you know, even in like seventh grade or something. I realized maybe art was a better way to wake people up and change things than being a politician and using laws to do the same thing. So,
right.
I kind of think that.
Because of how it affects people on a sort of deeper emotional level as well as just a cerebral level?
Yeah, I mean, art can affect people on a cerebral level as well. But I think really when you think about what politicians do, they actually are trying to affect you on an emotional level, especially now. And I think information warfare is real, but there's a more sophisticated way to do it. And that's using art. I mean, it's why, you know, in the Soviet Union, when there was a lot of poverty and, 100 years ago, people couldn't read. So that's why filmmaking just, like, completely exploded there as an art form, because they started making films to communicate to people. And, you know, of course, it was propaganda, but, incredible artwork came out of that too. And so I think, these things kind of cross over quite a bit, because people, it's all about telling stories. Some people tell stories to entertain, some people tell stories to influence, some people tell stories to do both.
Yeah.
And some people tell stories to sort of discover what's going on inside of them, and they're all connected, but it's basically the same thing. And I don't see a huge differentiation between, on a purely, like, ultra-simplified level, like, a story a politician might tell, a story an artist might tell. But of course, that tells you, you know, maybe something about the kind of art that I make, because I,
right, yeah.
I am interested in messages. Not that I'm not interested in, you know, beauty either, or being moved like by music that doesn't actually, you know, tell me what to do or tell me anything about the social or political world. That's a thing too that I personally value highly, but
yeah.
Where I am right now with my work is sort of more political. So
yes, yeah. The Promise Band is about Israeli and Palestinian women determined to end apartheid for the sake of friendship and peace, and they're willing to risk their lives to some degree to make music together. You're looking at a very challenging human situation involving quite a lot of suffering, both emotional and physical. What drew you to make this film as a documentary to highlight these kind of issues rather than presenting it perhaps in a fictional way?
Well, I think, you know, from a purely logistical standpoint, money is a factor. I mean, making a feature, unscripted feature film is a completely different animal than making a documentary. So my film was made in a very sort of, guerrilla kind of way, where I was able to do a lot of the work myself. I do scripted films. My next project is a scripted film. This is not something that I would ever write as a story. I mean, the story itself is like, I wouldn't have seen it coming from a million miles away. I think one of the characters even says that in the film. So, you know, documentary is about discovering things in the moment, and, you know, it's a different process than a scripted film, and it has a different impact. And so, you know, that was, they're just sort of different animals. I mean, I was making something else, and I sort of stumbled into this story and these people, and I just started telling it the best way that I knew how. You know, walking away and saying, hey, let me write a screenplay about this. That movie wouldn't have ever been able to be made.
Right.
So I don't even know what it would be, actually. So.
Yeah. That's interesting. So you weren't intending to make this film. So how did that come about?
Well, I think this is true with a lot of documentaries. You kind of find it while you're there.
Mm.
But I was, you know, in the film, part of the story is in the film when I was shooting on Mount Everest and making another film there. And that introduced me to Lena, who's the main character in the film, and came back to shoot with her in Palestine. And, you know, I met these other people and you know, it just kind of unfolded on its own terms. You know, and I didn't know it was going to be anything. I was just shooting because I was shooting.
Right.
At that point, you know, shooting part of Lena's story, and like, I'm just lucky that I kind of captured some of these early moments, because I had a hunch like, well, this is kind of interesting, and I you know, I might as well just shoot it. I'm here documenting this, and it ended up completely becoming the main story. So, and I did make the film on Everest, but it also took a completely different turn, and Lena wasn't even in it. So, you know,
yeah.
Which had nothing to do with me or Lena, but that, you know, it's just the nature of things.
Yeah.
So, documentary is really about access and sort of knowing it when you see it and being able to get it. And, you know, the access that I had pushed me in the direction of a very specific story. So I'm just grateful I was able to recognize it as it's happening.
Yes, so. Yeah. The Promise Band really draws you in. It doesn't have that sort of usual documentary feel, and the viewer feels less of an observer and more a participant. How did you approach the filming to get that feel?
Well, I mean, that was very deliberate. I think specifically because the subject matter can be very alienating to people, or just, you know, they also can be sick of it. There's like fatigue level going on with this particular conflict. So it's not like somebody would be sitting at home saying, oh, I really got to go see a movie about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict today, like for whatever reason, for a variety of reasons. So I wanted to sort of subvert the forms that I kind of am the master of, which is, you know, I make television, unscripted television, documentary television, reality television, you know, and we make stories out of things that, you know, if you were just standing in a room watching them unfold, you would not find them interesting, but people somehow flock to them. And, you know, you could certainly argue there's a place for those stories, but something like this film, I really wanted people to see it. I feel like there should be a place for this story and this viewpoint and these women to be able to tell what their experiences are. And it's not, like I said, the kind of thing people are going to be like, hey, I got to go see that. So I basically wanted to subvert the form that I know kind of how to use, you know, and make it almost deceptively entertaining just so that people can not feel afraid of sitting down and watching a movie like this. You know, is it going to be too academic? Is it going to be political? Is it going to be too upsetting? You know, whatever. And just sort of get on for the ride. And then by the end of it, realize, oh, this is actually about a whole different kind of journey. But sneak up on them a little bit.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. The psychologist Alice Miller writes at length about how art can help minimize the effects of trauma. I'm just wondering how you feel, or if you feel art can help people process difficult events, whether these events are ones they've experienced themselves or events they've perhaps witnessed.
Well, I think for a lot of artists, you know, myself included, I think, you know, creating something in whatever form that takes and whatever format you use is a kind of self-exploration and in a therapy in a way. It's a way to reframe, you know, traumas that you've had, or even just moments of confusion or growth that you've had. So, you know, when people are creating art, I think it's usually coming from something personal like that. There's also, you know, mimicking creating art, you know, which is like what we see in the commercial world, where it's maybe not coming from such a place of personal depth. It doesn't mean it's not creative, but it's a different kind of process. But I think whenever, in my opinion, and just this is based on my own experiences, having made both very commercial work and very personal work, when it's real, it's personal, and it's forcing you to go to places and to touch upon your own personal experiences so that you can, you know, to inform the work, to help make something universal, to even just be able to see something, you know, and you have to, you know, that can work or not work. There's a risk there, you know, you can fail, you know, your personal experience may not be interesting to other people, or you may not translate it well, but to me, that's what the process is. So it is directly connected to, you know, traumas, but not always traumas. Sometimes good things that happen to people, I would say just experiences in general.
Yes, yeah, that's true. Yeah, it doesn't have to necessarily be traumatic, but can just help perhaps a greater understanding of situations or other people or of yourself. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even like, obviously, drama is often connected to people's personal experiences that are sad, but comedy is really, like, you know, the old saying goes, it's rooted in tragedy, but it's very, very true. It's just a different way of coping with something that can be dark or difficult. And, you know, I think it's kind of amazing that it's there.
I think one aspect definitely of art, which is evidenced with your film, The Promised Band, is that it can present something in a way that perhaps will make people appreciate it or take note of it, which in another form they wouldn't. Like you said with this film, you know, the issue is such a long one and such a complex one and so passionate on both sides that a lot of people are like, oh my God. But like you say, to represent it in an artistic form, it can open it up to people who perhaps wouldn't even think of wanting to know any more about this issue.
That was an actively part of what I was trying to do, but, you know, and it was an experiment to some extent too. So, but yeah, you know, I mean, I think it worked.
Yes,
as much as I can. So,
yeah, well, the film's being very well received, and it, you know, won awards at Cinequest where it had its premiere. So, obviously, it is doing well. What is coming up next for The Promised Band?
We have new screenings coming up. I can't say all of them just yet. Some of them go all the way into October, but our immediate next screening is in San Francisco at DocFest. And we just screened at Sarasota. We also have a screening at Pixar, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I can't attend either of those. If anybody's in California for DocFest and SF, the rest of our team will be out there. So that's sort of on the immediate radar. If you go to thepromisedband.com, which we would love for people to do if they're interested in the film, it does have those dates there. And the rest of our team will be there. So very sad that I can't be there.
Great. Great. Well, I'll put a link up on the podcast page to your website. So if you're listening and you want to check out more about the film, if you go to the podcast, my website, itsaquestionofbalance.com, you'll be able to get links there to find out more information. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. We're going to a break now, but I'll be back with more from Jen Heck after these messages.
Like the music from It's a Question of Balance with Ruth Copland? Have you ever wondered what the full songs sound like? Now you can find out by listening to the new EP, It's a Question of Balance Music, available from iTunes, Amazon, and itsaquestionofbalance.com. It's a Question of Balance Music. Download individual tracks or the whole EP from iTunes, Amazon, or itsaquestionofbalance.com.
Hi, I'm Casey, and I'm the second generation owner of Bookshop Santa Cruz. We pride ourselves on being Santa Cruz's community bookstore and have been located in the heart of downtown Santa Cruz for over 47 years. We feature an extensive selection of new and used books, children's books and toys, gifts, cards, magazines, and games. Our knowledgeable booksellers can help you find just the right book or gift. We hope you can join us for our author events each week, featuring best-selling authors and books of local interest. And if you can't get downtown, our website has over 3.2 million titles, which ship directly to your home. We even have experts on site to help you publish your own book or family history. Come visit us downtown or at our website, bookshopsantacruz.com.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guest from the arts this week, award-winning filmmaker Jen Heck and director of the new film, The Promised Band. And just to remind you, The Promised Band is a documentary about a fake rock band comprised of Israeli and Palestinian women who decide that despite their dubious musical talent, a music group is the best cover story to meet and interact with each other in a place where that interaction would not normally be allowed just in because of friendship. So let's hear the rest of my conversation with Jen. So I was wondering, Jen, do you have a particular audience in mind when you were making the film? Who do you hope the film reaches?
We obviously want as many people as possible to see the movie because I think this is a very misunderstood and also polarizing issue. And when you, like I did, become, you know, really close friends with people who are living it, you know, you just really want to be able to do whatever you can to help the situation along. And I think people understanding it, people who are outside of it, you know, is helpful. And, you know, people tend to pick one side, and I understand that. I have my own opinions, but, like, I think it's also not about picking sides at a certain point, because people just need to take a step back and see what's happening and try to understand things on a human level, because on a human level, everybody involved in this conflict is kind of looking for the same things, that being security, family, health, you know, welfare, all these kinds of very simple, basic things that are universal. People everywhere are looking for those things. And there's, you know, there's nothing sinister about looking for or needing those things from anybody on either side. And so it really comes down to trying to understand what that means and find some common ground. I mean, this is a unique situation in that, well, for so many reasons that I actually can't even get into. I will spare you. But I mean, it's, what was your original question, actually? Because you made me think of something.
Who do you hope the film reaches, and did you have a specific audience in mind?
Right. I mean, I would like. There's a lot of parallels to this situation and to the humanity that I hope we brought out in the film. That people who don't know or don't even necessarily care about this particular conflict may still be able to connect to. And I think on an even bigger level, this is a feminist movie, and I think when you say that, that scares people. It's another one of those things that scares people. Mm. But, we are dealing, like, even just right now in the U.S., you know, there's a big conversation going on about feminism and institutionalized sexism. And I myself, even though I've always been connected to these ideas, am shocked at some of the things that I'm seeing. And we do have to deal with some of these issues, just like we've had to deal with racism that we didn't think was there or that a lot of people thought was over, you know. And I think we should see these things as opportunities, and not just in the U.S., but, I mean, this film has a lot of, gives us sort of an insight into Arab feminism, which is something that we really don't see in media here or there. And these are viewpoints that are just either suppressed or invisible. And there are universal aspects to them. You don't have to be Arab or Israeli or from a foreign country or even involved. You don't have to be a woman. I mean, you don't have to have a daughter. These are universal ideas. And, I think regardless of where you are demographically or physically in the world, growing and bringing our whole civilization, quite frankly, I know that sounds grandiose, to the next level, it does come down to us understanding each other's humanity better. And this film, I hope, is a little bit of insight into a part of humanity that people don't usually get to see for a variety of reasons.
Yes, yeah. All art is about communication. And as a final question, I was going to ask you if there's an overarching theme you're trying to communicate through your work in general, or is it specific to each project? So obviously engaging with our common humanity would be one thing. Is there anything else that you feel you're trying to bring out through all areas of your work?
Well, just looking back at my other films, and this is sort of something that other people have kind of told me about my work, but I would agree with it. One, a lot of my films are about isolation. And that doesn't have to be isolation. It can be isolation in a small way. And in a big way at times, you know, it doesn't mean you're at the top of Mount Everest and you're trapped. It can be you're at the dinner table and you're still the isolated person. So I think isolation is a theme that I touch upon a lot in my work. Mm. And it's in this film. The other thing is that I feel like this film and probably a lot of my films are kind of a love story. Mm. And that doesn't mean romantic love necessarily, but the humanity that you see in the film, which evolves to a level of just love, like these people love each other and they love each other, and it's in a very unexpected way in a very unexpected situation. And, you know, it's cool when you see the most unexpected people, like, find common ground and fall in love with each other. Again, not romantically, but, like, there's something real there. And it gives me hope anyway.
Yes.
And I think, you know, finding that kind of through line of love as a way also to heal isolation is a theme that those are both themes that appear in my work and that certainly appear in this film.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Jen. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And I wish you all the best with the Promise Band going forward.
Okay. And I will say, if anybody out there wants to learn more, the website, thepromiseband.com, and also check us out on Facebook. And we do talk to people on Facebook and try to engage as much as possible. And that's /band movie, or you can just look for The Promise Band on Facebook, and we would love to hear from you.
Great. Well, I hope listeners will do that. And thanks again.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
You too. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Coplin. And this week I'm featuring conversations with guests from the award-winning film The Promised Band as part of my series of arts interviews from the Cinequest 2016 Film Festival. If you go to thepromisedband.com, you can find information on upcoming screenings all over the country about The Promised Band. But if you are local to the Bay Area, there are screenings coming up at the San Francisco Doc Fest, as in Documentary Festival. So that's San Francisco Doc Fest of The Promised Band on June 3rd and June 11th. My next conversation is with Palestinian artist Lina Kadri, who is the lead protagonist in the film The Promised Band. And I spoke to Lina at Cinequest, where the film had its world premiere. So let's hear from her now. I'm here at Cinequest in the beautiful California theatre with one of the protagonists from the documentary film The Promised Band, Lina Kadri. You're an artist and academic, and I'm wondering, do you remember your earliest encounter with any kind of art, whether it be a book, a picture, a film, that affected you on a deeper level than just entertainment?
Actually, maybe some memories from childhood.
Mm-hmm.
I won a prize when I was in the fourth grade, and it was for a small painting that I did for the Kuwaiti National Day. And I was extremely happy because they got this painting on the walls in our school. And I think that was the reason why every time I look at that painting, I say, okay, I'm going to be an artist one day. So maybe that was a good memory to share.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
The film The Promised Band is about Israeli and Palestinian women who are willing to risk their lives to make music together. There's a lot of stereotyping of cultures in different countries, all countries, but this seems especially relevant to Israel and Palestine and how the rest of the world views these countries. Do you think art can help break down this kind of stereotyping to reveal more complex truths?
Yes, actually, stereotyping is, first of all, it is well known and seen for women before it's in for the regional issues.
Right.
So I think we are breaking down the stereotyping considering women and the situation in Palestine and Israel, because everyone is trying to just make stories about Palestinian-Israel issues. I think they are just reproduct things and reproduct the stories and represent Palestinian women specifically in a bad image most of the time, especially when it comes to the Western point of view. So now this movie, I think it's taking it in a subjective way, in a good presentative way. And I think the movie is different, and it's not a stereotype or a cliche at all.
Mm. Due to the high tensions between Palestine and Israel, being involved in a film like The Promised Band has inherent risks to your safety and possibly even freedom, I guess. How did you come to the decision to take part in the film, regardless of the dangers?
I don't think that I did anything wrong regarding Palestine or Israel, because our leadership, my leadership, my president, Abu Ammar, Yasser Arafat, he started the peace process with the Israelis. So why would I be afraid of something that my leader did? And why would I be afraid with something their leaders did?
Right.
So I think I have nothing to be afraid about, because I did nothing wrong. It's only we just try to communicate with other women to see the real Israeli women, the Jewish women, that I have nothing to do with them, that I don't really blame them. I blame their governments for being aggressive to our people. It's not the common citizen that we don't see, we don't communicate with, we don't deal with on a daily basis. So it's a different... I'm not dealing with a soldier, I'm dealing with a normal citizen, or at least normal woman, that we have common things together.
But in order to meet up, that is not usually allowed, correct?
It's not really allowed because no, it's like a personal issue. You can
can't do it for personal reasons.
It's not really allowed, but it's like it's not really common. It's not really available because unless you are living in the lands of 48, because people, the Palestinians and the Israelis, they live together. Mm. But in the West Bank, it's totally different because there are no Israeli citizen and Palestinian citizen living together in the West Bank. So it's a little bit different story.
Right. So when you first met the Israeli women in the film, how did you start to make music, and did that break down some barriers and make it easier to relate to one another?
Actually, because meeting them was a little bit awkward, because for me it was the first time that I deal with the Israeli people as normal people. We only deal with them as soldiers on the borders, on the checkpoints, in aggressive ways, because they are always holding the gun machines. Mm. So it was the first time for me to meet an Israelis without gun machines, so it was a little bit different. But for me, they were like just guests in my house, or wherever we met. They were guests, and I felt like we should... what was the question again?
How did you find that the music helped in the process?
Yes. And the music was like, it was something that we can... it was a language.
Yes.
It was a language, and it broke the barriers between us, because we started to talk about what songs you know, what song, I know this song, I know that song, so it broke the ice a little bit.
Yes. Yeah. Apart from the issues of how the Middle East is presented and viewed in the West, there's obviously deep divisions within the communities of the Middle East itself. And art is a means of communication which is non-verbal, often in the case of visual and some performing arts. You're a painter, an artist. Music has elements to it that are non-verbal. Do you feel that the non-verbal element of art is useful in reaching out to people and affecting people in a different way?
That was a long question. You have to slow down.
I'm sorry.
Considering that everyone doesn't speak the same language.
Yes, you're doing really well. I don't speak any.
No, I mean, but the nonverbal communication, like
music or art can transcend, the verbal miscommunications, because, you know, she may not speak Hebrew, they don't speak Arabic, they speak English, but at different rates of, you know, understanding. And so, you know, But there's this, the art provides a way to communicate without having to actually speak the same language. Like Lena said, it's its own language.
Yes.
So.
Yeah.
So what is the question?
So what I was trying to get at is whether you feel that art, because it has elements to it that aren't verbal, that are visual.
No, I understand.
Or energetic, even. Yes, you know, with music, there's you can be profoundly affected by music which has no words.
Yeah.
It's the same with sort of visual imagery. I'm wondering whether you experience a power in art in that way.
Yes, I understand now. Yes, of course. I think you can. Music gives you a certain energy that you can sometimes, if you want to get close to someone, you can put certain kind of music, and if you want that someone to be far away, you can also use certain music. So I think it's a good element to put rules how to you want to communicate with others, maybe.
Yeah. Right, yes.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guests from the arts this week. And that was Palestinian artist Lena Kadri there, who is the lead protagonist in Jen Heck's film The Promised Band. We're going to go to a break now, but I'll be back with more from Lena after these messages.
Ciao,
I'm Luca from Tramonti at 528 Seabright Avenue, steps from the ocean. We are the authentic Italian pizza and pasta restaurant, serving also organic salad and house-made desserts in a friendly family-style atmosphere, indoor or on our lovely patio.
Tramonti is open every day from noon to 9 and later on Fridays and Saturdays. Come enjoy our specials every Tuesday neighborhood night and the best deal for a healthy bite at lunch every day.
We bake our bread and prep our fresh pasta and pizza daily. Beppe, Danielle and I want to say grazie to the Santa Cruz community for supporting us in the past 2 years. Allora, buon appetito!
Visit Luca and Beppe at Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue. That's Tremonti, 528 Seabright Avenue.
Can you imagine living without stress, anxiety, or fear? And can you imagine a life filled with harmony and inner peace? Is that even possible? The Ananda Yoga and Meditation Center in Scotts Valley offers simple tools to help you become more effective at work and more centered in the face of life's challenges. At Ananda, we offer yoga classes for everybody, inspiring workshops, devotional chanting, and Sunday services based on the teachings of Paramahansa Yogananda. Our teachers and therapists are highly trained professionals who work together to inspire a healthier you. And your first Ananda yoga class is always free. Visit us at anandascottsvalley.org or call 338-YOGA. That's anandascottsvalley.org or 338-YOGA.
Welcome back. You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland, and my special guest from the arts this week. The first half of the show was talking to award-winning filmmaker Jen Heck about her life and art and new film, The Promised Band. And then before the break, I was talking to Palestinian artist and academic Lena Kadri, who is the lead protagonist in The Promised Band. And you're currently listening to the Arts Hour, and this is one of my series of special arts reports from the Cinequest 2016 Film Festival. So let's hear some more of my conversation with Lena. And the director, Jen Heck, also chips in into the conversation as she did at the end of the last excerpt that I played. So just so you know who that is the director, Jen Heck. And also wanted to let you know that this film, The Promised Band, at Cinequest, it won Best Documentary. And Jen Heck also won the Canon Atomos Documentary Filmmaker Award. So it was a very popular film at the Cinequest Film Festival. Anyway, let's hear the rest of my conversation with Lena now. Sometimes art can give us a voice when we have no voice in any other way, and that seems particularly relevant perhaps to Palestine. I don't know whether you feel that it is very relevant, that art, expressing oneself through art is a way of having a voice.
Yes, of course. Art is a way to express yourself. It's a way to send the messages you can say out loud. So, of course, it's a good tool for me, at least, to express myself.
What did you expect from the film? And after making it, what you got out of it, was it different to how you thought it was going to be?
Actually, it's a mixture of feelings. It's not only one feeling, or I feel this or I feel that. It's just I feel that it's a good experience for me, and it's a different thing that happens. It doesn't happen to you every day. It doesn't happen to any Palestinian woman to wake up all of a sudden and she's a part of a movie like this,
right?
So yes. It's not something really common to be done, but for me it's a good experience, and I will wait and I will see the reaction and everything until tomorrow. So hopefully that it will be like something that will make me and make everyone happy.
Yes. What would you like to think that audiences will take away from this film?
They will take away the different message, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, the different message, because it delivers a new message and a new perspective.
Yes.
To look at the conflict. And I hope that it will be a positive one.
Yes. Yeah. I think also for me with a film like this, what's important is to see people as human beings. So often when we look at situations outside our own or even within our own communities, it's very easy to make them very black and white and to see issues rather than to see human beings and mm-hmm. see real people. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you feel or hope that people will get from this film, that the truth is quite complex and people can interrelate in ways, even when they have different views?
Yes, as you said in the beginning, because especially this issue between the conflict between Palestinian and Israelis, this movie makes you feel that this is a total different subject that we are dealing with. Normally, it has been talked about in one perspective, but this one is really different, so I think that's it.
Yeah. And would you say that one of the themes of the film is friendship and how friendship can reach out between different cultures?
You can say friendship also. You can have... it's not friendship exactly. It's like relation between human beings. It's relationships. It's not friendships,
right.
Maybe. That's a better term.
This movie probably wouldn't have been possible if we were a cast of men. And I'm curious about Lena's thoughts on that subject.
Why do you think it wouldn't have been possible? Because they wouldn't have done it?
Men relate differently. And I think that the fact that we had a bunch of women who were dealing with their own issues in both societies, women are, you know, seen differently than men in both societies, and I think that was a bonding experience. But I also think women are less aggressive, if you want to be totally
right,
more stereotypical about it. But it's like, you know, a lot of, while we were making the movie, that was just something that I think came up a lot with us. You know, like, if it were men, and we have one man in the film that we try to bring in to the picture, and he
ends up dropping out.
Yeah.
See, I read somewhere.
Yeah. And like one of the things I had said in the filmmaker intro, I'm not sure if you watched that, but I think this is true. It's like, in a way, the cast of the movie is a microcosm for the societies themselves. And the reason why the band fails is the same reason why the societies fail.
Yeah.
You know, and ultimately it's the religious guy who makes it so that we can't get, he's our, we need him to make music because he's the only really good musician.
Right.
So he needs to be a part of the process, and he says he's going to be a part of the process, but he's not a part of the process. And I think that's a total, there's a analogy between that and the greater society and the issues that happen in the greater society. So,
right,
you know, and it's kind of on the nose. It's like the band represents the society, but in fact, it actually did. And I think if women had more control in either society, I would wonder if at least, I mean, I know the conversation would be different. I can't say the outcome would definitely be peace and love, but it certainly would be different.
Yeah.
You know, because you're looking at...
the world would be very different,
well, even,
I think, if
even,
women
yeah.
were.
Even yeah. here, we have sexism, and we have women treated as second-class citizens, and we're not even religious, you know, really, for the most part. I think, Lena, the movie ends with her saying, if women ruled the world, we'd only have jealous countries. And I think that's kind of... We ended with that because we kind of... Everything else about the movie, connecting and friendship, but we wanted to say, like... And also, women do this differently. And I think that that's relevant. And, you know, that's what made this movie different. If we had a bunch of guys of any age, young, old, whatever, there's just a different approach. There is more aggression, in part, not just because men have different hormones, but because men are socialized differently.
Mm-hmm.
And they just can't let certain things go. They can't joke about certain things the way that women can, and women can connect on the fact that they've been oppressed by men all this time.
Right, yes.
So yeah. I think that, you know, was a factor.
Okay.
I don't know if Lena agrees.
What are your feelings about how the female aspect played into this?
Actually, women, we can bond more together. We can, between a woman and the men, there are too many gaps, and women treat things differently, and we solve issues differently as well. So that's why maybe this movie came out and became like our movie, because we all just agreed, and it went out very smoothly, and we didn't have like a stubborn point of views that everyone just want to do whatever they want. So every one of us were very flexible and open to any ideas that Jen came with. That's why.
I recently did a show on my radio program on spirituality and religion. What's the difference? I'm wondering, do you think if we focused more on broader spiritual principles or the values that underlie different religions, that it might help break down barriers?
Actually, as you said, spirituality is something and religion is something else. And now, as we can see, all religions are become like extremists. It has nothing to do with Islam or Judaism or Christianity. I think that extremists, they exist in every religion, but spiritual people, they will never be extremists. So I think this is the point, or this is the thing that is different, that varies between the spirituality and the religious. You can't see a spiritual person gone so far or to be an extremist aggressive way. I mean, he's extremist like in his way of worshiping, or but you will.
He's
don't
tolerant about this.
It's he's tolerant, and also you. I don't think that there is an extremist who is spiritual.
Right.
I think it's really different. So I believe that spirituality is something. Has nothing to do with religion. Nothing, because you can be an atheist but spiritual.
Yes.
Because it's not only worshiping God. You can worship.
Yes.
The universe.
Yeah.
So you can be an atheist and a spiritual person.
Well, there was also a lot of academic thought that considers that religion has been co-opted in many conflicts throughout history for thousands of years. That it seems to be about religion, but actually, what it's about is other issues that they're just using religion as
exactly.
a vehicle.
Of course, because religion, it's the easiest way to convince people that the superpower, which is God in every religion, is going to
back
punish you. Or to back you or to punish you. So it's really easy to control people's minds with the name of God. So in every religion, it has been used for like hundreds of years, let's say. So I think you can just brainwash people and in the name of God, use the tool of religion to just start a war or start justifying killing other people. So religion is the worst tool ever to be used in the whole universe. So that's why I think religion should be treated in a personal way.
Yes.
Religion should be only just something personal. It should not be like applied in every aspect in the country.
Yes. Yeah. The Promised Band has strong women protagonists, has a female director, producer, cinematographer.
Yeah.
There's a lot of the people involved in making the film are women. Was that important to you, or is it just a bonus that...
It is a bonus, actually. It wasn't really important. I don't have any problem to do with the guys.
Yes.
Because I don't think that men are our enemy. They are not our enemy. So sometimes people, when they see the women power gathering together, they think, oh, we are your enemy. No, you are not our enemy. It's just if you are a good person, you can. Feminism doesn't have nothing. It has nothing to do with being a male or a female.
No.
But some people, they don't really understand the term of feminism. They think that you should be a woman to be feminist.
Exactly.
And this is crazy because not all the people, they really understand that term. So I think, as I said, if it is a bonus, and because all of us, all the team is women, but if there is any man, we would appreciate his understanding, maybe, yes, or his participation. Yeah. And some guys actually helped us in so many ways. We have so many people who helped us, which they are men, and they are amazing men, and we can't just ignore them, because yes, in a way or another, they were a part of it. So we have nothing against men.
No. There's a very small percentage of women in the media generally, even in the West. I think it's under 5% in America. So it's always nice to see a film that has a strong female component. But I don't know if you're familiar with Rianne Eisler. She has a wonderful book called The Chalice and the Blade. And she speaks about a sort of dominator model and a partnership model. Mm-hmm. And so, like you're saying, it's not about men and women, but it's about sort of principles. And for a long time, we've been subject to a sort of dominator principle, where might is right.
But it's the patriarchic system, you
exactly.
know. It's like
yes.
the reproduction,
yeah.
but in a different ways.
Yes.
Because before it was used, the church was like controlling everything. Then the media and somehow, or in some period of time, then capitalism. Then, you know, it's just a circle that is turning around. But it's all in the same subject, but it's different tools.
Yes.
With the years, it becomes like different tools. Now I think it's the tool of religion that is controlling things. So it used to be the patriarchic system, and before maybe it was, you know, it's like just a tool, maybe politics, yeah. maybe war, maybe, you know. So I think every decade, it turned to a new tool too, because the old tools become like familiar for people, so they get rebellious about it. So I think they are creating another tools. Sometimes they are using health for a tool, maybe insurance, maybe, you know, these subjects. It's crazy. And yes, every time they use different tool to control people and to just brainwash them.
Yes. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time.
No
thank
problem.
You.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
You're listening to It's a Question of Balance with me, Ruth Copland. And thank you very much to my special guests from the arts this week, award-winning filmmaker Jen Heck and Lena Kadri, who is in Jen's latest film, The Promised Band. And I was fortunate to be able to see The Promised Band at its world premiere at Cinequest. And it really is quite a remarkable film, and it is entertaining as well as putting forward some very difficult issues. So definitely the style with which Jen approached the cinematography and the structuring of the story really draws you in. So I would recommend following The Promised Band and checking out when there might be a screening coming near you. I will put a link on my website, itsaquestionofbalance.com, on the podcast page, and you can also go to their website, thepromisedband.com, for information. And I just wanted to remind you again that at the show's website, itsaquestionofbalance.com, you can check out podcasts of all previous shows. We have a guest page and a topics page full of photographs that and the topics and the guest. You just click on it and it takes you to the past show. We've had some wonderful guests and some really thought-provoking topics, so I hope you might check that out. Thanks for listening, and I look forward to you joining me again next time.